Good morning. I'm calling the Senate Education Committee to order at 8 a.m. And today is March 27, 2017. We have present with us this morning Senator Stevens, Senator Diesel, Senator Begich, and myself, Chair Hughes. And thank you for those assisting us. Remember to silence your cell phones. Today we will have public testimony on Senate Bill 87, School Construction Energy Efficiency, standard sponsored by Senator McKinnon. There were a few small changes, one being to add an architect and an additional construction industry member, and also to adjust the lifespan from 30 years to 50 years, but we didn't get the CS back this morning as we hoped. So my intent had to been pass it out today, but what we will do is briefly at the beginning of our Tuesday evening meeting, we will take care of that business. And so with that, I am going to open public testimony on SB 87. And I do not see anyone online at this point. Is there anyone in the room wishing to testify on SB 87 School Construction Energy Efficiency Standard? Seeing none, I will close public testimony. And are there any final comments from the sponsor at this time, or you'd be welcome to make them tomorrow night? I just wasn't sure if you'd make it here for the meeting tomorrow night, so I wanted to give you an opportunity now.
Madam Chair, members of the Education Committee, I'm Senator Anna McKinnon representing District G. I appreciate you hearing the bill and commenting on the bill, and it is a work in progress. So I look forward to changes that you're doing and testimony that we might hear from around the state as the bill moves through the process. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Senator McKinnon. We appreciate your work on this bill as Brittany's work as well. So at this point, we'll set aside SB 87 and we will move on to SB 96. Oh. We just had someone who has signed on. We will open public testimony again. Just thank you, and Senator McKinnon, for the gentleman online. Senator McKinnon is in the room and also will hear testimony. So Craig Fredin, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing your name correctly. Please introduce yourself for the record and your association and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Craig Fredin. I am a vice chair of the Association for Learning Environments. We are an organization whose membership is represents the individuals who use, plan, design, construct, and maintain the state facilities for schools across our state. Many of our members are just starting to learn about this bill. We are very excited about the bill and think it has some very important points that will help reduce the operational cost of our schools in the state, and we are wanting a little bit more time to be able to work with Senator McKinnon's office in tweaking the bill a little bit. There's some outstanding points in there, but as with oftentimes with early legislation, there are ways to improve on it to make sure that it is a win-win and its implementation meets all of the goals of the senator. We appreciate the news there that an architect was added to the committee. One of the other things that we would like to request would be that a mechanical engineer and an electrical engineer be added to the working group. The items that are in the working group's purview are very technical, and though we really appreciate the inclusion of AEA, Cold Climate Housing, AHFC, and DOT, from a policy standpoint, we believe the specifics of the bill really requires some specific knowledge of the systems that are in the bill. The other thing that we would request is that, and again, we're trying to pull together a letter as an organization this week, and so having public testimony closed today was a little bit ahead of our schedule. The other major item we would request is the working group includes superintendents, one rural, one urban. We appreciate, we all appreciate their input on school-related items, but one of the groups that we are unique in our makeup is we also represent all the facility managers of the schools across the state. These are the individuals who maintain and operate the schools. They know what's best as far as what works and what doesn't. This bill is going to be the ones that impact them the most. We would request that the superintendents be replaced with facility managers from the school districts. Again, one urban and one rural. In my opinion, among them, that entire group, those individuals will be the most important and knowledgeable individuals. There are a long list of items that we, as a group, have some recommendations. We will submit those to the senator. And, again, we are very excited about this bill. And we're looking forward to seeing how it progresses. And we as an organization would also like to offer our services to be able to provide input both during the legislative process and also at the end of passage. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Fredin. And I just want to assure you that this is the first step along the route for this bill, and there will be future opportunities for public testimony. And your letter, if it comes in later in the week, I'm sure it will be reviewed. So we're just at the beginning of the process. So I just want to assure you that. Senator Stevens, did you have a question?
I just want to ask Craig about an issue that I think is really fascinating in the bill, and that's the co-locating of school facilities with other state and local services in rural areas. And as I think about that, some of the really small schools I know of, well, it'd be really hard to separate, it'd be hard now that the school is there and used for many years to allow part of it to be used by another agency. But does that mean then that when we design schools, we should take that into consideration? And what would you think about that? When an architect works on a school, maybe build it with the idea that it may be partially used by other agencies? Would that be a part of the design process?
I think that's an outstanding idea. It's that sharing of resources, particularly in our rural communities, that is outstanding, out-of-the-box thinking, and we applaud the senator for bringing that forth. My understanding is through the deed process, that is currently available to a certain extent. I think that if you think about one other thing that I want to mention is in last Friday's testimony, there was a discussion about how that cohabitation of facilities, there they have separate entrances and exits. I do not currently read that in the bill. We believe that, or my personal opinion is that as long as you were able to separate those facilities completely, the safety of the children would still be maintained. And if you think about it regarding that state entity being across the street from the school versus in the school itself, the safety of the children, in my opinion, is pretty much the same. We can separate out the energy requirements. We do it with pools and boroughs and school districts all the time. But I think it's a very innovative and practical application. The other part of that, too, is the shared technical services between organizations in a village. That, too, is another outstanding idea and can save money for not only the school districts but all of those entities in the village that, frankly, there's a lack of technical resources in our state who can understand and operate HVAC systems and electrical systems.
Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Fredin, and we will at this time close public testimony for a second time. And we will set SB 87 aside. Thank you very much, Senator McKinnon and Brittany. And we will move on to SB 96. We had planned to have invited testimony this morning from Commissioner Johnson, but his schedule was such that he was not able to be here this morning. And so, but we do have our CS back, and I wanted to go through them today because we have been taking input from a number of stakeholders around the state associations. And I want them to see this before we have public testimony tomorrow night so that they and others will know that some of the concerns have indeed been dealt with in the CS. So if I could please get a motion to adopt the CS, we'll have Joshua come up to the table and go through the changes.
Madam Chair, I move that the committee adopt the CS for Senate Bill 96, version 30LS0452/Tango.
I will object for discussion. And we'll take an ad ease. Josh. We're back on the record, and I welcome Joshua Banks, the Senate Education Committee aide, to the table. He will go through the changes in version T for us at this time.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Joshua Banks, staff chair of Senator Hughes, and I'll just briefly go through the changes made in version T of the CS for Senate Bill 96. And the first change that was made is on page 4, line, in section 7, lines 6 through 13, we're deleting language that was added there. It was due to some concerns that school districts would be forced to cooperate with businesses or other organizations that they chose not to due to the language on line 7 that a district may cooperate or the department may require a district to cooperate. And the previous version had it so that the state may require a district to cooperate with a business organization. And the purpose of these sections in the bill regarding the cooperative grants was so that they get a grant if they are working with those groups. We didn't want the possibility that the state would force a district to work with a group that they chose not to. And next change is on page 6 in section 11. We're adding a sentence on line 8 and 9 stating that the ADM of the school described in this subsection is computed by multiplying the student count for the school by 1. And this was just to really make sure, this is a suggestion by the Department of Education, to make sure that students would still stay in the formula and that they would receive would receive funding through the school, and the school would, and the district would continue to move through the formula and get funding. We're also adding a sentence on lines 11 and 12 to define road, which means a road that is open to the public and receives year-round maintenance. That way, if there are a few communities in rural Alaska that have a road connecting to them, but they only have seasonal maintenance, or in some cases, as Senator Bagich has noted, that there may be a trail that connects two communities, and he didn't want that to be considered a road for the purposes of this section. And a change that was requested, and that the chair and other members have discussed, was a phase-in of Section 11, the reduction in funding for school districts. And the way the formula works is that there already is a phase in through the hold harmless provisions. It would phase in, and the department can correct me if I'm getting anything mixed up. It'll phase in over 3 years. And we had discussed the possibility of phasing in any reductions to individual schools. And whether you did it for an individual school or the district as a whole, because of the number of schools that are below the 80% capacity, either way, you would trigger the hold harmless provisions, and it would phase in the funding reductions.
Joshua, I want to talk about the fiscal note in relationship to this. We can do that now, or we could go back to that. I'm not sure how many more points you have to go through. So do you want to finish, and then we'll go back to that?
Yeah, Madam Chair, absolutely.
Senator Stevens?
I don't see the phase in Section 11. Could you point that out to me?
Thank you, Chair. Senator Stevens, the way that the formula works is the school size adjustment in that Section 11 is changing. The actual school size adjustment is you know, Section 10, that's the table that every school goes through. And after the school size adjustment, the district sums up the ADM for each school and then goes through each step of the formula, the district cost factor, special need, and the whole harmless factor is right after the school size adjustment is made. And so it's not in the bill, but it's within the formula as the next step.
Thank you.
And Senator, we'll bring the department up to that can probably speak to this, their expert in this area. So go ahead, Joshua, and then we'll come back to that this section. We'll look at the fiscal note, and we'll bring the department up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The next change is on page 8 in lines 27 and 28. And this was brought to our attention that there are some third-party vendors, including the last council school administrators that offer professional development for teachers and administrators. And we just wanted to make it so the consortium would be allowed to have, would be allowed to offer the curriculum, the development courses that these organizations provide. And then the next change is on page 9 in lines 3 through 6. And this is an additional suggestion by some school districts and the committee that we set a fee as a ceiling, and if a school district chooses to offer courses at a lower rate, if they want to just charge the actual cost for the teacher, for the internet costs, whatever the cost associated with the course, then they can choose to do so, and it makes it so that that there's a ceiling to that, which is based on the proportion of classes they take times the BSA rate.
And then I'll just make a comment here while we're going through the input that we got. This might get pretty complicated for finance directors if they're calculating based on the BSA, and a set market rate might make a lot more sense. Go ahead, thanks.
And the next change is on page 13, and this is actually the last change in version T. And in section 21, there was an additional sentence that would have been on line 21 that stated the legislature may not appropriate more than the income of the public school trust fund of the previous year. And as the Department of Revenue mentioned on Thursday, indicates that the trust had a net loss in the previous fiscal year. That section would make it so the legislature cannot appropriate anything from the fund. And so we deleted that sentence. And the chair and I have talked about the possibility that this might open up constitutional concerns, and our understanding is that it won't, but the Department of Law is looking into this, doing analysis of this bill to make sure that there's not any problems with this section as well as any other sections of the bill.
And I'll just elaborate on that a little bit more. The constitutional concern is that we can't cut in or eat into the principal, and if there were a loss and you were doing a draw, we just need to be protected so we're not cutting into that. So that there may be some additional language if there's a concern to protect from that in the event of a loss. So that was the final change, Joshua. So now we'll go back to what page was that where we were?
Then section 10.
Section 11.
I'm sorry, section 11, page 6.
And then if members would also like to look at the fiscal note from the department.
And Madam Chair, it should be the second to the last fiscal note. The identifier is EEDPEF032517.
Everyone has it. It is department fund capitalization, allocation public education fund. Okay, Joshua, if you want to speak to it, and then we'll have the department come up and speak to it.
I think, Madam Chair, as the committee can see, the overall funding reduction would be phased in over 3 years, and that way school districts don't see an immediate drop in the full amount of funding. And this is, again, because of the whole harmless provision.
And it actually looks like it's over 4 years.
Correct, Madam Chair.
Yeah. And, I do expect there to be discussion, and I expect actually there to be concern about this. And this is our starting point. But, Joshua, we were talking earlier in the office this morning before coming in here. This is the worst-case scenario. So can you speak to that and how the numbers might not play out if the districts make certain choices?
Yes, Madam Chair, and for the record, Joshua, thanks. This is the worst-case scenario where if school districts did nothing to adjust their boundaries to merge schools together, then this would happen. And the intent of this section is not necessarily be punitive to school districts for having excess capacity, but to give them the incentive to use the capacity they have, not have extra buildings. The example I've given a few times is rather than have 10 schools at 50% capacity, have 5 schools at full capacity, because it's extra costs that the districts can have, and those are costs that aren't going towards education, towards the classroom. And so if school districts did nothing, then this would happen. But if school districts make the necessary changes to merge schools together, then those individual schools won't be subject to the 80% capacity reduction in the school size adjustment. They would then get the full school size adjustment that the formula allows them to, and they'll be able to receive the full amount of funding under the formula.
Thank you for that. And as an example, if you have 3 schools at 65% and they merge to 2 schools, we are saving the cost of the principal, perhaps the vice principal. We are saving custodians. We are saving secretaries. We are saving school nurses. We are saving a large array of staff. We're probably saving some bus routes, quite a few things. And as we've learned, it's money in the classroom, not the money in overall education and improved academic achievement. And while we're talking about this, I think it would be a good idea for us to look at, I believe it's in here, Josh, it's a chart that shows the capacity of the schools throughout the state. And we did learn in the previous bill, SB 87, that 53% of our schools are not at capacity. So let's find that handout. I know I saw it in here.
No, I'm sorry. It would be in the Senate Bill 87 packet.
Yes, yes.
The Senate Bill 87.
Yes.
Well, I can't seem to find it, but I have reviewed it. Oh, I do have it now. But I think this is a real eye-opener when you scan this. There are really opportunities to be creative and save administrative funds. So I just want members to be aware of this. Sometimes we have to do things that are, the status quo can be pretty comfortable, and so we want to really encourage districts to think about this. And I know the commissioner told us that he combined schools in his district when it was tough, and they did take a hit, but it was still worth it as far as the savings then after they made the adjustments. So At this time, Joshua, do you have anything else to add to this? Because I'd like to bring the department up to comment on this particular piece. Thank you.
Only not that I can be sure that the committee has this document as a part of the Senate Bill 96 packet.
Okay, very good. Actually, before you leave, does anyone have any questions for Joshua?
I do.
Okay, go ahead, Senator Begich.
Thanks. Thank you, Madam Chair. And Joshua, I don't know if you heard, I said, I do, of course. My first question is, I still don't see the provision if it's a district even. Obviously, if it's a district of one school, this wouldn't apply. Is that correct?
Interesting. That's correct.
All right. There's still nothing that seems to address if you close one school. There's the issue of potentially overcrowding the remaining school if it's a district with a limited number of schools. Or would the intent be that you would spread the students across the district?
Please, Chair, Senator Begich, that our intent is not to force schools to overcrowd, and so if there are, as the Chair mentioned, if there is a situation where there's three schools at 65% capacity, then the district would be able to reduce the number of schools to two. And that is a concern that other organizations have brought forward, that in the situation where it wouldn't make sense to merge schools, then there isn't necessarily a provision that addresses that.
So, Senator Begich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. But it's not in the bill, and that's why I'm concerned about it. The bill doesn't say that. It says 80%, and that's a concern. If I may.
Senator Begich.
The issue of cost savings, I want to be sure we're doing exactly what we intend to do here if it's an issue of cost savings. So if transportation routes are being considered as part of it, they're still within 25 miles of Eagle River to Anchorage, for example. That would entail some new bus transportation and some new busing that would have to occur. And so I want to be sure that we truly incorporate the costs. Further, the buildings still are within the ownership of the district, and either they're going to be maintained, sold, or otherwise dealt with, so that has to be considered in the cost as well, correct?
Correct.
So just final follow-up, Madam Chair.
Yes.
I want to be absolutely sure is all I'm saying here, Josh, that the numbers reflect the reality of the existing structures that are built and that you're getting what you're intending to get here, which is full utilization of school structures within the building. And it may not necessitate a cost savings as a result, but you will end up in the long run with full utilization. So I want to be sure that the numbers reflect that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and appreciate those comments, Senator Begich, and we are at the beginning of this journey, and we welcome any kind of language that might tighten things up, and there are some smart people in this room, smart people listening that I'm sure will be giving us input, but we are going to work on that and make sure we don't have unintended consequences on that. So is there any more questions? Are there any more questions for Joshua? Thank you very much, Mr. Banks. And if the department would like to come up and speak, actually there are two fiscal notes that I believe are of interest, but if you'd speak to the one we just were referencing to start, that would be great. Your name's on the record, whoever would like to begin.
Good morning. For the record, Heidi Teschner, Director of Administrative Services with the Department of Education and Early Development. And the public education fund fiscal note that you have in front of you, Madam Chair, you said it did say technically over 4 years, and the reason that there's a base year that gets calculated into the whole timeless provision. So if the ADM decreases, the adjusted ADM, no, district ADM, decreases by more than 5% from the base year to the next fiscal year, then the whole timeless provision kicks in, and that's when your three-year phase-in begins.
Any questions for Heidi? I was wondering if there would be any way for the department to run the numbers if, and I know it'd be really hard because you wouldn't be quite sure how schools might combine, but would you be able to run some sort of scenario that would show if the majority of schools that could combine would combine, how that might affect these numbers? Because as Joshua stated, this is the worst case scenario. This would be if all schools stayed as is.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, we can definitely try to figure that out. I think that would be helpful. Senator Begich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Heidi, could we also look at the impact, if you do that, the concomitant impact on pupil transportation, for example? Is that possible or not?
Through the Chair, Senator Begich, that might be a little bit harder since districts determine their own routes, and we don't have, and at the local control, we don't have any say on what it is, but I'm sure it, depending on which schools and where they're located, could potentially have an impact, but I don't know if I can get you that information. Senator Begich?
Maybe this would help. Brief follow-up. Thank you, Madam Chair. So what would be the impact on the amount that the state appropriates for pupil transportation as opposed to, because the amount's based, it's formulaic, isn't it?
Through the Chair, Senator Begich, it's based on a per child cost that's set in statute, so the number of routes wouldn't have effect on the amount that they get.
Right, so that answers my question. It wouldn't actually affect the amount of money that goes out from the state for pupil transportation. It wouldn't reduce it or increase it. The districts would just have to figure it out.
Through the Chair, that's correct.
Yes, and I would hope that during testimony time we'll hear from districts on that and how it might impact them, and we'll take that under consideration. Are there other questions for Heidi or for Santa? Let's talk about the other fiscal note that wasn't zeros. I can find it. All right, I'm not seeing it now. I know I had it earlier this morning.
Third page in, Madam Chair.
The third one? Oh, I found it. I had pages sticking together. Thank you very much. So it is Department of Education Early Development, Teaching and Learning, Sports, Student and School Achievement. Address that, please, Heidi.
Yes. As you can see from the fiscal note, just going to start with FY18, the work that's required in the bill as it reads would require an additional 8 full-time positions in order for us to conduct that work. So this fiscal note reflects the cost for those 8 positions, and as well as the cost for 26 districts to receive the cooperation grant of $200,000 each. In addition, there is a, trying to remember, pardon, hold on a second. There was a one-time cost to, I'm trying to find it, Madam Chair. Oh, pardon me. So the very bottom line. So there's course development and review. There's the cost for 10 courses to be developed over at $7,000 a year. So there's $70,000 also in this bill for that. For the first 3 years, so those are just for a 3-year period of time.
Heidi, could you speak to the 8 staff positions for those listening, and just so we'll kind of get a sense, I know we can read, but just talk about those 8 positions and what they'd be doing in the department. So we can think about, you know, in a time of a fiscal shortfall, we're looking at adding positions. So we have to think hard about doing that. But if doing that is going to help us do a better job teaching our students across the state at an overall savings, then it could be an investment we should consider. So can you talk about those 8 positions, please?
Yes. Madam Chair, within Section 9, within the cooperation grant, due to the reduction that the department has taken in our administrative capacity, we do not have anybody in staff who could manage this piece, so there would be one full-time position that would manage these grants and ensuring that they're being implemented appropriately. In addition, within Section 16, within the virtual education portion of the bill, there are 6 positions, seven within there, that would implement these, and 3 of them would be content specialists, so 1 for language arts, mathematics, and science. And then an additional position that would establish the consortium. And then there's 2 positions that create and maintain the database that the virtual courses and professional development that is needed. And then, of course, those 7 positions would work across each other to implement all of this.
And when we're not counting the cooperative agreement dollars, but just for the staff, what is that amount?
The total amount for the 7 positions, salary and benefits, we're estimating at $806,400 for the 7.
Okay. Thank you. So if you have one person who's working on these cooperative agreements, what kind of savings could we expect that to districts statewide?
Madam Chair, I see that they're, if districts are collaborating together, and that's what you're referring to, that they would be saving money on their end through administrative costs. So maybe they share a business office, and so they don't need duplicative services, so they can save money on that end and maybe put that more towards classroom. Maybe they need whatever it is that they need for the classroom, and doing that shift from administrative costs to instructional costs. That's what I see as savings by districts working together.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions for Heidi or for Sana on the fiscal note? May I ask how you decided on 26 for the cooperative agreements? Was you just about half the schools?
Madam Chair, half the schools, since only one district would be getting them, and they would be partnering with another district. If everybody partnered, at maximum there would be 26 districts that would receive funding.
Okay, thank you. Well, seeing no further questions, appreciate your input, and we look forward to hearing the Commissioner's thoughts, too, on this. Are there any other questions or comments from committee members at this point on the CS? I guess I should remove my objection. I didn't do that, and we have now officially adopted the CS. And so with that, we are going to close up our meeting today, but I want to remind members that we're meeting tomorrow evening, Tuesday, March 28th at 5:30 p.m. in this room. And under bills previously heard and scheduled, as I mentioned earlier, we will adopt the CS for SB 87 at the beginning of the meeting, and then we will open public testimony for SB 96. And so, seeing no other business before the committee at this time, we will adjourn at 8:40.